Connecticut Democrats, or Connecticrats, as they have never been called.
Welcome to the GOTV, that's Get Out the Vote edition of Connecticrats, the CT Dems podcast. I'm David Kostek.
And I'm Tara Kamen.
Well, this week we had a political rally pretty close to Connecticut. It was in New York City. Were you able to catch any of it?
I did catch some parts of it. It was an abomination of a rally. We could pull hundreds of quotes from it that were just absolutely appalling. But my least favorite one was the one made by Tony Hinchfield, which is a comedian who was invited to speak at the rally.
Like, I don't know if you guys know this, but there's literally a floating island of garbage in the middle of the ocean right now. Yeah. I think it's called Puerto Rico.
I think that was the joke heard around the world, except it wasn't a joke. It landed flat in the room, even.
I think my new slogan is going to be make comedians funny again. Let's try to come up with some real jokes, but all kind of funniness aside, I've been to Puerto Rico. It is a beautiful place. It has amazing people there. And the fact that someone went on stage at a political event and was able to be empowered to even say something like that is just horrible. Trump recently went on some talk show interviews and said that he doesn't even know who that person is and that he doesn't even know why that person ended up on the stage. But the truth is that a real qualified candidate would vet and make sure that anyone who's invited on the stage with them at their rallies is a quality person and would not go on and say these kinds of things. But are we really surprised? Because it's really reflective of his own rhetoric. So really disappointed.
Yeah, and the Trump campaign, in fact, did vet that comics stuff. They pulled out another joke. There was some other joke that was more offensive and worse, which means someone read that and went, yep, that's cool. Let's go with that, a representative of the Trump campaign. So that is that's where they're at. There was, of course, swift condemnation around the world and throughout voting communities around the U.S., including Connecticut. Representative Christopher Rosario of Bridgeport, along with Bridgeport Councilwoman Aideen Yeves, along with Antonio Felipe, all representatives there, and other Puerto Rican leaders around our state, Hilda Santiago and Meriden, a number of others, were quick to condemn it. And those stories ran in the news. Let's hear a little bit of that.
We've contributed so much to this country, and to be disrespected in that way by somebody who plans to lead it, it just shows that that person is unfit to lead the United States of America.
Racism is not comedy. As we stand few feet away from the stress factory, this is no laughing matter.
And we as a Puerto Rican community need to make sure that our friends in Georgia, New York, Pennsylvania, and the Midwest come out and vote.
I will tell you, before I got into politics, I was a high school teacher and I taught in New York City. The school I taught at was about 60-65% Hispanic Latino. And of those, they were sort of, the students were, I would say about half that group was Puerto Rican and about half that group was Dominican from different parts of Manhattan. Now that they're about 40 years old, that tells you how long ago I taught high school, they are on Facebook and they are on Instagram and they are on other channels. And this thing spread like absolute wildfire through WhatsApp chats and social media peer-to-peer.
Yeah, and it must be challenging to kind of have to reconcile your identity as being distinctly American, but also having this culture that is for no reason being hated by one of your political parties. I myself have had the privilege of having many Puerto Rican friends and engaging in Puerto Rican culture. And anyone who kind of spews this rhetoric, I think, clearly has never met a Puerto Rican person or really truly immersed themselves in Puerto Rican culture. And I feel sad for them.
As bad as that quote unquote joke was, it was not the only thing coming off that stage that was purely toxic or from previous recent Trump rallies that is horrendous to hear. It absolutely shocks the conscience of anyone who kind of remembers normal Republican campaigning to hear this stuff.
Yeah, recently I was watching Tucker Carlson at a Trump rally talk about how drawing an analogy of Donald Trump winning the election as daddy coming home and then going on to say that, actually, why don't we just drop the audio here, I guess.
Absolutely.
There has to be a point at which dad comes home. And when dad gets home, you know what he says? You've been a bad girl. You've been a bad little girl, and you're getting a vigorous spanking right now.
Yeah, there's no way you could paraphrase that and get it across to people how horrifying it is.
It makes me incredibly scared because I think about all of the terrible fathers who are sitting on the couch watching that kind of rhetoric and feeling empowered to continue behaving the way that they are and abusing their families. And it's terrifying to me that it's one thing that these kinds of things happen in our country and are pervasive within the culture. It's another thing when one of the news anchors of one of the biggest media channels in this country goes on there and somehow makes it okay to be spanking your daughters. And then also just like the connotation which we talk about teenage girls really needs to change. Their rights are on the ballot this year. And now I guess their safety is on the ballot as well, given this rhetoric.
Your rights absolutely are on the ballot. And the ballot boxes in Connecticut are actually open. They've been open for business since October 21st. So we're about 8 or 10 days into early voting. Do you know people who went and early voted?
There are quite a few people on this campus, my campus, Connecticut College, that have early voted. I'm actually very proud to say that we are, I think it's the most registered students on a college, highest percentage of registered students on campus in Connecticut is Connecticut College. So we have really great get out to vote efforts. And it's awesome. It's convenient. You can go. I think the hours are Tuesdays and Thursdays are 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And then remind me, David, I don't know the other hours. I think it's like 9 to 5 or go ahead.
Almost. Even better. Well, slightly different. Shifted 1 hour, 10 to 6. So you can go from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. most days. And then the extended hours are mostly behind us, except for the day we're dropping this episode, Halloween. It'll be open till 8 p.m. So you can distribute some candy and then get yourself off to vote, or vote before the little kids come around to the door asking you for a Reese's peanut butter cup.
And it's so exciting to see how many people are interested in early voting, given that this is the first year that Connecticut is having early voting. I feel so proud. I feel that people are taking the change really, really well. So it makes me excited for all of the early voting initiatives to come for Connecticut.
I've had a number of friends who are not deeply engrossed in politics, you know, normal people. And they have texted me just saying, this early voting thing is great. They were like thrilled to be able to go and early vote and to go and early vote like with their adult kids or with a spouse on like just like a Saturday at noon. You know, you can drop in and vote. It's fantastic. Throughout the state, we've had well over 400,000. By the time this drops, I bet you we break the 500,000 mark of people who have already gone and cast a ballot. In most towns, that is in your town hall. If you want to see where you early vote, ctdems.org/early vote, one word, will get you there. In the town of Plainville, 13% of people have already cast an early vote as of this Tuesday. And of course, that number will rise. One of the people they're voting for is state representative candidate Rebecca Martinez. Her district, 22, spans Plainville and parts of Southington and Farmington. We talked to Rebecca, who had one of the closest races in the state last time around, came up 53 votes short, and now is running again with a full head of steam to win the seat in the 22nd district. Rebecca Martinez is our guest here on Connecticrats. So I have to ask, is the number 53 seared in your mind? Like if you're watching football on a Sunday and you see a linebacker wearing number 53, do you just hate that guy a little more?
The number definitely motivates me, for sure. I can say that I've knocked a lot more than 53 more doors this time. And we've ID'd a lot more than 53 more people. So it definitely creates some motivation, for sure.
What do you see sort of generally as the difference between 2022 and 2024 campaigning, whether, you know, you have more experience, so you have a shorter learning curve, or how mood has changed, how atmosphere has changed, how things have changed in your experience on the doors talking to voters?
Yeah, so I think the atmosphere has changed. When we ran in 22, we were both brand new running. So I think things have changed a bit. Since then, the momentum really has been building. On a local level in town, we had a middle school project, and the council, the Republican council members, wouldn't even let the community vote on it, which became a real hot button issue. I serve also as our DTC chairperson and our campaign manager throughout. So we knew we needed a middle school. The teachers, the students, everybody has voiced we needed this. So I was really involved. I went to a lot of the council meetings. I really held them accountable. And we flipped every seat in 23. So we went from minority representation to supermajority. And every Dem was elected in the ballot. And then we had to get the referendum passed. So I worked together with all the PTOs and all of the parents, and we worked together. We formed a PAC, and we did PTO type campaigning, that real grassroots campaigning. And we passed that $61 million project with a 78% margin. So it's been good. I think community involvement, and I've always been really involved in the community. And I think people have a more of an idea of who we both are this time around.
I think that one of the things that makes your candidacy very unique is the fact that you are a nurse and that you work in healthcare. Are there any specific like legislative initiatives that you hope to champion that might sort of affect healthcare or play upon your experience in the healthcare community?
Absolutely. I really think it's imperative as a nurse just to have healthcare providers that are been at the bedside to be at those decision-making tables. Patients really need a lot of advocacy right now. Healthcare is, affordability is an issue, and accessibility. So I have family members that are struggling to take care of their loved ones. I'm seeing that a lot, and I'm hearing about that a lot at the doors, as well as families trying to get their children in mental health services. So I'm really hoping to push bills for accessibility.
In the past legislative session, there was a bill in response to a really horrible situation that arose where a nurse, a visiting nurse, was assaulted and I believe killed in Connecticut. And then there was a reaction, of course, SB1. And anytime anything has SB1 on its name, number one, it is a priority for the legislature. I'm kind of shocked that your opponent voted against that.
Yeah, I was too. I actually went back and double-checked. I was really surprised and concerned for sure. That bill would have given home care nurses like myself and like so many others protections of background checks. We now have safety pins that we can push and things of that nature just to keep us safer and to keep more eyes on us while we are in these homes. So they were really instrumental. Psych nursing, the assaults we've seen on the rise over the last few years. So we want to keep our healthcare professionals safe. It also, though, brought in more CNAs to nursing homes, which is so needed. Anybody that's been to the hospital recently or had a loved one in a facility or hospital, you know, you push that button. And unfortunately, you're waiting longer now because of the staff shortages. It's a real issue. CNAs help, those nursing assistants help keep patients safe. They keep them from falling. So I would have loved to have seen that go through to make sure that our patients were safer.
Beyond healthcare, are there any other pressing issues in the community of Plainville that you are particularly passionate about addressing?
Yeah, there's two off the top of my head. I think of education's a big priority of mine. I serve as vice chair of our board of education. And I think there's been a lot of push for a couple things. One, affordability's been a big issue at the doors. And we know that right now the rising costs of special education, mental health needs, all these things that our kids desperately need, the state funding coming in doesn't always, you know, it's not enough. So I definitely want to go to Hartford and ensure that we're getting our fair share and bringing back what we can to the taxpayers, but making sure that the kids have exactly what they need. My opponent's been serving, and he's an educator, and he put up one bill for education. It was on cursive writing. And I just think we really need to look at the budget more, and especially really pressing issues like teacher recruitment and retention are big issues right now. So I'd like to handle things like that more.
I definitely agree with you on that. I remember the last time I had to write something in a classroom. So the cursive writing initiative is a little bit of a weird priority.
So let me get this straight. You're the vice chair of your local board of ed. You're chair of the local Democratic Town Committee. You do some grassroots organizing on the side and advocated for that school and formed a PAC and at least helped form a PAC for that. And as well, you're campaigning for a state house seat while working as a nurse. Is that right?
Yes. And I serve on the state board of ed. But busy moms get things done. And that's part of my campaign slogan.
And you have kids? How old are your kids?
Oh, 14 and 11.
All right. So that could be schlepping to sports or band or whatever else. Can you tell us the secret of your 38-hour day?
I just, you know, when something is a priority or it's important to you, you find the time.
I've been very impressed watching from afar your campaign last time. I got to tell you, I really thought you had it. And then it came up a little short. It was a heartbreaker on election night. We're not going to have that same heartbreaker this election night. For people listening who might be near you in, Farmington, Southington, Plainville, anywhere in that area, how can they get involved with you?
Absolutely. So we have a bunch of events coming on this week. We do have a face-to-face grid.
Go ahead. Sorry about that.
We do have a lot of events going on this week. They are all on Mobilize. But we're phone banking tonight. We're phone banking Friday during the day. We have several canvases, lit drops, phone calling over the weekend. But we have a good atmosphere. And I will say the amount of volunteers it's just so heartwarming. Like, I'm so appreciative of the volunteers that are just coming through the doors that have never made a phone call and are, you know, getting a little uncomfortable, right, for hopefully some good change. So people have really been putting themselves out there, and I really appreciate their help. So I just tell everybody, 53 votes. So every vote counts. So every bit of effort is what's going to make this election. So come on down.
I have been stunned at the number of volunteers that we get through to Connecticut Dems and the number of people who have been making the trips down to Pennsylvania or making calls into Pennsylvania for the Harris campaign. Do you think some of that momentum is a bump off of Kamala's nomination and the convention with, you know, Michelle Obama urging everyone to do something?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm really happy to see that. And there's a lot to do here, too, you know, in CT5. And we're just going to keep working. We're working really hard for my campaign, but on the DTC side, you know, as well as Johanna's and the whole battle. We're just going to keep moving. But CT5, I think, has a lot of activities and stuff going on and ways to get involved this week.
That's an excellent point. So you can check out ctdems.org/events. You will find a ton of events that you can do, including those that Rebecca has going for phone banks, canvases, and all sorts of things throughout this entire weekend. There are, well, as we're recording this, there's about 6 days left. When we publish this, there'll be 5 days left. The slogan is all gas, no brakes. Let's go all gas, no brakes through this weekend.
Absolutely.
Some people talk about this as a vibes election. Because the polling is so close, it comes down to how do you actually feel? I'll tell you, I feel good about Rebecca's race. I'm looking forward to seeing results from those towns. I'm feeling pretty good about a number of other races around the state at the state legislative level. There are a few, frankly, I'm worried about. We'll see how that all shakes out on election night. One we'll be keeping the closest eye on, of course, Johanna Hayes' race for Congress in Connecticut's 5th District. You know, if this is a vibes election, tell me how you're feeling about Johanna's race. What are the vibes for you?
I think the vibes are incredibly good. I mean, we've had a huge amount of support, I think, across the state for Johanna, which is incredibly important. And I believe that there's a recent public poll that came out that showed them to be relatively close. So I really believe that with that momentum and then the larger national momentum, we'll really be able to push her into the place that she needs to be.
When I went to canvas for her in Meriden, there were people from Berlin who had come over. There were people from other parts, even further east in eastern Connecticut, who had come to Meriden to canvas that day. We've seen a lot of support from the unions, where canvassers from IBEW and from SEIU and other unions have come out to help. All of that help is very useful. If you have some time this weekend, you can, again, ctdems.org/events. You'll find a canvas for Johanna in New Britain, in Meriden, in Danbury, in Torrington, in places like Avon and Canton, in Brookfield, a number of places, like all over the place, basically. No matter where you are in Connecticut, something's probably pretty close. Please get over there and help out.
It's the last couple of days, so if there is a time to do anything, it's within this week. So if you have any spare time, any bit of energy, it's the time to do something about it.
With Johanna's race, the vibes I'm feeling are very positive. I do think Mr. Logan has sort of gone off the deep end this year and really fully embraced kind of the MAGA crowd. I don't think he believes he can sacrifice any votes by distancing himself from Donald Trump. So he's done the opposite and done the full Trump embrace. It hasn't gone unnoticed. This is Kevin Rennie, who is a columnist who writes for the Hartford Courant, and he used to be a Republican state senator for a couple of years in the 1990s, and I think it's fair to say has always been a conservative voice in Connecticut media. He appeared on television this weekend. Here's what he had to say about a little bit of a warning about a George Logan victory.
I have to say, I'm not so sure that come January next year, if we could count on George Logan to vote for duly elected, accept duly elected electoral votes. I don't know. He's become a mystery as the Republican Party has descended into madness.
And that's why there's not going to be a George Logan victory. So we've been working really hard. We've also been working really hard on the race for Kamala Harris. So tell me what your vibes are on the Harris race on the top of ticket.
I think she's doing a really great job. I really like how near the end of her campaign, she's been sitting down for a lot of interviews, which I feel like is really being helpful in getting people to see her on a human level as well as a candidate level. And she's done a really great job communicating her plans, and not just concepts of the plan, actual plans for her candidacy and her eventual election. So I've been feeling great. I think that there's a lot of good energy around her. And she's done a really great job at keeping the momentum strong throughout these months, not just when she first announced, but maintaining that energy all the way throughout. So I have very good vibes heading into this week.
The 538 average that people look at, the polling average, you can argue with its methodology, you can argue with the inclusion of polls, but it has been 51-49 pretty much consistently throughout the last couple of weeks. There's been a lot of stability. This is really a coin toss election as to what happens in those seven states. So I read something that I really liked. You want to hear my take on the Harris? How am I feeling about a Harris victory? I am nauseously optimistic. That's how I feel. I'm nauseously optimistic because I've got that pit of the stomach feeling, no question about it. Anyone who remembers 2016 has that pit of the feeling stomach. Worst day of my political life, I'll tell you that. And we don't want to relive that. So optimistic, but a little sick if it goes the wrong way. I need Steve Kornacki to give me good news. I just need Steve Kornacki to give me some good news.
I mean, I think coming off of the rally in Madison Square Garden and all this kind of rhetoric, I feel like Trump is doing a lot of the work for her recently, which has been really positive. So it's really easy to see that contrast. And even though I know it comes down to a couple hundred thousand votes, I am praying and hoping that those people will see the light, I guess, in some way.
Doing the work for her, that's up to you as well. So if you want to get down to Pennsylvania in this last weekend, again, I'm going to pitch it over and over, ctdems.org/events. If you've listened to this podcast at all for the last 6 months, that's the place to go. You will see opportunities to take a trip down to Pennsylvania in this final closing weekend to talk to do some get out the vote work, which means you'd be talking to fellow Democrats to make sure that they vote, or to do a little persuasion work on those last 10 people who haven't made up their mind somewhere in Pennsylvania. Let's get to them and talk to them and get this thing over the line. We are also seeing colleges mobilize. You made a reference to it a minute ago. Tell us what's going on at Connecticut College and in Eastern Connecticut.
So there's a lot of get out to vote efforts. I know at UConn, there is actually an early voting station on campus where you can both register and vote at the same time, which I think is really, really incredible and exciting for people. And students love convenience, so it's like the best thing ever. At Connecticut College specifically, we have an organization called Camel's Vote that's been hosting not only debate watch parties and house debates with Joe Courtney, but also they have been having voter registration drives, trying to get people registered not only in their home states, but also within Connecticut. They've also been really encouraging the students, because we live in New London, to, you know, if you're living in an area that's kind of a definite win for Democrats, maybe, or whoever you want, maybe registering in New London instead of your home state, because we do have a lot of out-of-state students. And then there's also a lot of get-out-to-vote efforts at Eastern as well. So I think students are incredibly involved. They're getting registered, and I think they're really enjoying the early voting as well.
Students love convenience. I'm gonna broaden that. Everyone loves convenient voting. The AB question that's on the ballot this year, please make sure you vote yes on that one. Let's expand the ballot even more. And you're right. If you're not registered to vote, you can go to your town's early voting location, register to vote right there, and you'll get a ballot on the spot and cast it. And it's like one-stop shopping for having your voice heard. So next time we come to you, it will be after the election. We will not be talking about what could happen. We'll be talking about what just happened. So we hope that you'll dial us up again in the weeks after the election. And by all means, whether you do it early or whether you do it on November 5th, get out there and vote.
I'm hoping for a happy episode next week. Bye-bye, guys.